Funding for Think comes from SMU Master and Doctor of Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. If it's human nature for moms to worry about their kids even when they're grown, then it must take something almost supernatural for the mothers of U.S. military service members to cope with the repeated goodbyes and dangerous deployments that come with the job. Elaine Lowry-Bry has sons in the Army, Navy, and Marines, and a daughter in the Air Force. She'd be the first to tell you that her great pride in their career choices does not shield her from missing them at family gatherings or worrying about them when they're deployed. But she has learned a great deal over the years about how to manage the sacrifices that military service requires, not only of those on active duty, but also of the families longing for their safe return. She shares much of what she's learned in her new book, Be Safe, Love Mom, A Military Mom's Stories of Courage, Comfort, and Surviving Life on the Home Front. Elaine, welcome to Think.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
We think a lot, and appropriately, about military families in which mom or dad is in the service. But the parents of soldiers and seamen and airmen and Marines also face challenges. Do you feel like the parents get overlooked in that national conversation about supporting military families?
Well, I think that they are the reserve line of support. And obviously, after growing up as a military brat and being the child of a military officer who went to war in Vietnam multiple times and being married to an Air Force pilot, that's the nuclear family. And of course, they need all the support that we can garner for them. But from a mom perspective, as you so eloquently stated, we don't stop worrying when they turn 18 or 21 and they're out of the nest. That continues. And so when it comes to finding support and reassurance and inspiration, I think parents tend to, we're scattered everywhere. And so trying to find a way to encourage them and bring comfort to them is one of the reasons why I wrote the book.
Were military careers for your children something that you and your husband hoped for as they were growing up?
Oh, not really at all. Our children are very different. They have very different personalities, different aspirations. We knew our firstborn wanted to be Top Gun. He declared that when he was 4 years old. And we had a brother-in-law who was a Navy recruiter who just bombarded us with all kinds of Navy paraphernalia, which was quite upsetting because my husband had been in the Air Force. I met him when I was in Air Force ROTC. So we were like, no, you're going to be in the Air Force if you're going to be a pilot. But we really, we wanted them to have big dreams, and it didn't really matter in which direction. And if you would have told me when they were small that they would all four be serving in the military, I would have been astounded. It's been quite a journey, and I'm very proud of the fact that they want to serve and do something beyond themselves. But we raised them to be warriors for the right. In other words, not necessarily military service, but we raise them to volunteer and to think beyond themselves. And they each kind of came to military service as a way to express that as adults.
Your kids actually grew up on a farm, so it's perhaps pretty evident to most people listening that they might have been a bit more self-sufficient, a bit more self-disciplined than some of their peers. But you still write about that shock of dropping your oldest son off at the U.S. Naval Academy and asking all these questions about, like, how's he going to get by? How's he going to do his laundry? And being told, essentially, he's going to learn to do that for himself. Please leave.
Right. Basically, that's true. And that's, you know, right after that is when I started to participate on the parents listserv, which, you know, was the old version of Facebook, I guess. And when I became a moderator during that year and for the last 14 years, I've been the one telling people, don't worry about, you know, don't sweat the small stuff. They will figure it out. And it's very shocking because as a parent, you want to empower them to be able to meet any challenge. And when you drop them off, either if they're at a service academy on their first day or they head off to boot camp, you know, we've all seen those recruits in the airports with their big manila envelopes. It's up to them now. And in a way, that was so shocking when it first hit me because I did not consider myself a helicopter parent at all. We did a lot of things purposefully so our children would be independent and we didn't run interference for them. But the first time that they were sick and went to a doctor without me or just those kind of situations is when it really struck me how I really had no control. Now, the really great part about that and what gives you so much support later on is that I know that they can meet any challenge and overcome it. And with their training and with their personal character and perseverance and just plain stubbornness, I have so much confidence in them when they're in difficult situations because I know they don't need me. But, you know, every mother still has that protective instinct in her. And it's a big adjustment, especially when it's your first child who does it.
One of your sons called home one day and started the phone call with the words, "Mom, I almost drowned today." How do you encourage when things are really tough and I guess keep your own emotions in check when you know that's appropriate but you don't want to?
Well, you know, I'm lucky because I've gotten to practice this multiple times. He was my third one to go into the dunk tank. So by that point in the time, I knew what to expect. Same thing when they go to, if they're an aviator, they go to SEER training, which is a survival training where they become a POW. And so I had been through that emotional ringer of knowing that your child is being pushed to their limit and it's dangerous. And if anybody's trying to picture what we're talking about, if you ever saw an officer and a gentleman and there's a scene in there where they're in the dunk tank and the one young man does become unconscious and is pulled out of the water. So that is the mental image that is going through this mother's brain as he tells me that. But once again, every time you come to a challenge and you overcome it, then you're stronger and you're better trained. And what a better illustration of that is just last spring, I believe it was last spring, the months go together, there was a helicopter accident off of Djibouti. And everyone got out of the helicopter, and it was one of the really big ones, not a Chinook like my son's, but the Navy version. And all the Marines that were on board, everyone got out because they had been through that dunk tank training. And so what I tell parents as they start to enter this new world as a military parent is you want it to be hard. You want them to be pushed. You want them to go through these experiences because then they know that they can overcome them if they have to. And so it's kind of this, you know, watching when they're little, they're on the swing and they're saying, "Push me higher, push me higher." And there's so much excitement and they're so excited to be going so high. And as a mother, you're kind of like, "No, please, just stay closer to the ground." But at some point in time, you know, I don't want them staying closer to the ground. I want them reaching for their dreams. And so I don't get in the way of that, even when it's uncomfortable for me.
What have you learned about helping other parents who are struggling with that impulse, having spent, you know, 18 years of their child's life setting limits, you know, having curfews, putting safety devices in place, sticking helmets on everyone? When they come to you and say, "My child can't handle this, they're being pushed too hard, it's too much, and I want to intervene." Not that they would be allowed to intervene, but how do you help them sort of recognize what you've just talked about?
Well, some do try and intervene, and it doesn't go well at all. Once again, you know, I go back to what is the difference between being a helicopter parent and not? And, you know, I joke around and say I am a helicopter parent because I have a son and son-in-law who fly helicopters. But a helicopter mom is somebody who is hovering. And why is she hovering? There's either two reasons. One, she doesn't think they can do it on their own. Or number two, she doesn't have enough information. And so one of the things that I do every summer is a whole new group of parents come through onto our Facebook pages and, you know, they're learning how to be military parents, is I provide them a lot of information. For a lot of people who didn't grow up in the military like I did, this is a foreign land. They don't understand why things are done a certain way. Why are they screaming at my kid? They're screaming at them because they are trying to prepare them to operate under stress, high stress situations. Yes, I know you yelled at them, but they knew that they, you know, they still knew you loved them. They're not quite so sure about their upper class. But so information about the reason why training is done in a certain way is very helpful for parents and especially moms to understand. And then I take them and I take them forward and I say, your sons and your daughters are going to be in very difficult situations. We have no idea where they may end up. Certainly on I-Day in 2001, I did not expect my son to be part of a naval force that was at war 3 months later. So we have no idea. There are new places where troops are being deployed that we've never even heard of before. What will happen down the road is a mystery to us. And all we know is that we need to support our children being trained as well as possible. And they need to find out that they can do more and that they don't have the limits that we think they do. And so I invite them to get up on the bleachers and sit with me and cheer them on and support them. But we cannot backseat drive because we're not even in the car and we're not going with them to places that they will be going. And so once you get your mind wrapped around that idea that you have a totally different role and now you're parenting this adult, it's easier on you. Of course, you still have moments, you know. Don't look at baby pictures or toddler pictures when you're having those moments. You know, you just want to bring them all back home and this is done. I'm done with this. But there's a purpose in all of it and it's keeping them safe. And if they end up being in a situation where they're responsible for other young men and women, they have an obligation to give it their best and do their best. And we don't want to limit them.
Were all your kids tidy as children?
Oh my gosh, no. That is just a joke.
Well, I wonder about the transformation when suddenly you realize, oh, it is possible for them to keep their things very orderly and follow the rules.
It's all situational. Nothing is different when they get home. Some are more tidy than others. The biggest thing was I spent 18 years trying to get two of them to wake up in the morning, and I was unable to do that. And it's amazing how the military did that in about 12 hours. So, they do all have a very competitive spirit within them, and they like to push themselves. And so that fit in really well because it's constantly pushing yourself. But no, there were no early signs of that.
We're speaking this hour with Elaine Lowry-Brye. She's active in a number of military family support organizations, and she's the mother of four U.S. military officers, one each in the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. Her new book is called Be Safe, Love Mom, A Military Mom's Stories of Courage, Comfort, and Surviving Life on the Home Front. If you've got a question to ask or a story to share, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies, offering evening programs for a Master of Liberal Studies and the new Doctor of Liberal Studies degree. You can design your own master's or doctoral degree at SMU this fall. More at smu.edu/GLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Elaine Lowry Bry, who is the mother of four U.S. military officers in the Marines, Air Force, Navy, and Army. Her new book is called Be Safe, Love Mom, A Military Mom's Stories of Courage, Comfort, and Surviving Life on the Home Front. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Elaine, I guess as an Army brat, if you weren't an absolute native in all the acronyms of the different branches of the armed services, at least you had an ear for them. What do you recommend to families who are sending an adult child off to the military, have not grown up with these things? It can be really confusing initially.
Well, there are so many opportunities now to get connected. On Facebook, we have a Naval Academy USNA parent community page, but I'm also a member of Marine Moms, and there are just a number of support groups that are out there now through the internet that you can connect with other parents and you can learn the ropes. There are some basic books, especially if you have a child going to a service academy. At the Naval Academy, there's one called Brief Points, and it's just a guide to that, all that stuff, acronyms, whatever. But, you know, just doing a little bit of research and connecting with other parents to guide you along is one of the first steps. And it is a different world. It is sometimes like you feel like you're on a different planet. And I was very lucky that I grew up in that world because it made it a lot easier for me, though I did not understand the Navy at all. We were so sure that our oldest was going to the Air Force that when he said he was going to the Naval Academy, I mean, I started to cry. And he says, Mom, what's wrong? I said, I don't know those uniforms and those ranks, and I'm never going to learn them. So, there are differences between each of the services. But the best thing is, and I say this to everybody, find, you know, we hear about servicemen in their battle buddies. Well, we moms need battle buddies too. And I have my go-to moms that, at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm having a bad night. I can call my battle buddy. And that's so important.
What's the difference between saying goodbye to one of your kids moving to, say, a base in another state and saying goodbye before a deployment to a combat zone?
Well, interesting that you should say that, because one of the things that I discovered when I was researching for the book is the number of military casualties that occur while people are stateside. You know, when you're flying an airplane or a helicopter or operating a tank or working with live ammunition, stuff can happen. And it has happened. And in fact, in this past 15 months, there have been 10 military aviation accidents. And my family, you know, my children or me through the parent connection have had a loss with 9 out of 10 of those. And only one was in the Mideast Theater of Operations. They were stateside. So I talk about putting on your military mom backpack, and the minute your child enlists, it's like all of a sudden you're carrying a couple extra pounds around with you, because there is an underlying level of concern no matter where they are. Now, when they get orders to deploy overseas to a difficult place or a place where you don't even know, and I've had those too, where I wasn't allowed to know where my son was or what he was doing, that makes it quite a bit harder. Because once again, information makes everything easier. And there are times when we just don't have any, and that can be very difficult.
When you talk about the potential risks, even when people are stateside, your youngest son was stationed at Fort Hood at the time of the mass shooting.
Right. He was there for the second mass shooting. And of course, the first one was so absolutely horrendous and shocking. And one of the voices, I have 25 different mom voices, you know, who contributed to the book, one of the voices was actually an Army psychiatrist who was stationed at Fort Hood in the first shooting. And so that was very, you know, we were all just horrified. And when the second one started, my son was stationed there. And, you know, when you're in the midst of, when something is happening that is triggering, first of all, memories of this last horrific event, and you're in the middle of it, you lose any sense of rationality. And so I just basically started to panic because I couldn't reach my son. And it was like there was two voices in my head. The other voice was saying, there's 50,000 people stationed there. What are the odds that he would be in the wrong place at the wrong time? But it was, you know, it triggered a past traumatic event. And it just really pointed to me to one of the things that is really heavy on my heart, is that not only do we have, you know, so many wounded in body warriors, but the wounds of the spirit are really difficult. And as a mother, watching some of my children's friends be affected, watching the epidemic of suicide, having mothers contact me and say, my son is suffering from PTSD, what do I do? He doesn't want anything to do with me. It's really very, it's very heavy on my heart. And as an educator, one of the things that I really am intrigued with is brain research and understanding how the brain works. And to me, one of the answers to all of this is we just need to put a massive effort to understand the frontier of the brain, because it is very sobering when you have your daughter deploying and she tells you, yeah, I just had to take my cognition tests. And I'm like, what is that? Well, they're going to measure my, you know, my brain abilities now and then when I come home from Afghanistan to see if I've sustained any kind of a brain injury. And your heart just collapses in your chest. So that's one of my missions, is that we can try and find solutions. Right now, we're doing what we can, or we're trying to do what we can to deal with the epidemic of PTSD and TBI and then, you know, suicides. But I think the answer is in the brain and being able to really figure out what's going on and then be able to fix it.
Elaine, do you find that fear of PTSD or TBI or some kind of mental damage, has that been added to the backpack of worry that military parents carry around in a way that it wasn't maybe even when you sent your first son to the U.S. Naval Academy?
Oh, I think so. And one of the things that's really spurring it are some of these, you know, terrible events that we watch unfold. And then also the suicide situation is just beginning to touch us more and more, that, you know, there is a connection or you know someone. And so I think that it's there. It's hard to articulate. I mean, it was hard to write about it because, you know, growing up in a military family, it was suck it up. You know, we just press on and we do our duty. And watching people struggling, and also, you know, part of my story was I spent a year in Kabul, so I was exposed to some things that normally I wouldn't see. And trying to be very aware of how I personally responded to trauma, and, you know, what are the healing steps or whatever. So I think it is something that we carry around, and knowing that the onset of it can be up to 7 years after an event, worrying what's going to happen in the future, you know, as our sons and daughters move forward and have their families, and, you know, is this something that they're going to have to deal with in the future?
Having grown up sometimes missing your dad when he was serving in Vietnam, what do you understand about what your grandson, for example, is missing when your son is away?
Oh, it's that loss of connection, that inability to be able to just share normal things on a daily basis. And even though we have Skype and we have email and we have, you know, so much more technology than when my dad would send cassette tapes to us and we'd all sit in the living room to listen to him talk, it's very hard for it to be spontaneous. It's hard to share all the details. And so you start to lose that connection. And then hopefully when they come home again, you rebuild that connection. But when it keeps happening over and over again, it can be hard to keep that tight connection. And so that's in my backpack. The impact on my grandchildren and all military children is a weight that I carry because I carried it as a child.
I thought it was really interesting that you and your husband have learned that once your children were married and had families of their own, if they were going to be leaving for somewhere, you would go and have a visit and say goodbye, but you wouldn't be there on the last day because you felt like that was time they needed to spend with their spouses and their kids.
Exactly. I kind of think of, you know, this nuclear family is kind of like this precious potted plant, and it needs to be fertilized and watered, and it needs to flourish. And we're the next circle, we're the outer ring, and so when they are, you know, leave taking or when they're coming home, you know, we both just felt like we need to be out of the picture. Now, if they said, you know, come on and, you know, the ship's coming in and you're invited, of course we would be there. But we're not going to interfere with those times because I remember what it was like when my dad came home. And when he left, I wasn't driving. When he came home and I went and jumped in the car to drive somewhere, I'd been driving 6 months, he was in shock. You know, there's a lot of adjustment that goes on. And so, you know, I accept the fact that once my children are married, I'm secondary, you know, when it comes to communication during deployments. If my daughter-in-laws or my son-in-law give me crumbs of information, I'm just grateful for it because they need to spend the time communicating with their spouse because it's just hard on a marriage. So I understand that. Do I miss not being number one? Of course. You know, we all love those days when our children were close to us. But I think it's healthier for them. And, you know, and I know that's really hard for a lot of moms, but I keep reminding them that number one, this is where mother-in-law jokes come from. So, you know, just try to be respectful of that. And then when they're really feeling lonely and missing their children, I ask them if they like them living in their basement. And they agree that that isn't probably the best place for them either. So,
what have you learned when you do have those precious visits about not like freighting them with too much expectation? You know what I mean? Like you've missed somebody for so long and you get 4 days together or a week together and you can make it almost more stressful if you want too much out of that time.
Right. Well, my family, they're all doers. You know, they're all active. And so a lot of times when we get together, it is usually around some kind of, I mean, my oldest son's going to run 100-miler later this summer. You know, is that not crazy? You know, so we will be gathering, you know, to cheer him on along the trail. And, you know, and especially if I get two of my kids together at the same time, I mean, they are, as I said, they have a competitive streak. There's a lot of joking around. There's a lot of just hilarity. And we're not a, you know, very emotive, you know, oh, I missed you so much or whatever. That isn't the way it is. It's a lot more tickling, teasing and, you know, racing each other down the driveway. So, and that's the way they were when they were little. And that's where I get my joy. The other part of it is I don't set myself up with giant expectations of how, oh, we're all going to try and, you know, do this. I am much more, you know what, if somebody is going to be able to, you know, if we can visit and it works out, I'm going to go grab what I can get. And I'm not going to, you know, have a hissy fit because everybody wasn't home for Thanksgiving. It just, that's not even in the picture anymore.
And if by some miracle on, you know, 3 days in August you have everyone together, you're not above deciding that's when you'll have Christmas dinner.
Exactly. Exactly. And recreate some of the traditions of the past. Exactly. Because that, you know, that's fuel for this mother's heart. And and what I really love to see is now I see them really trying to connect with each other, that they miss each other in being together. And that makes me feel really good that even though it's so hard, they will work, whether mom is involved or not, to try and see each other and be with each other. And I'm really pleased with that.
What goes
even
in
though when they were little, I thought maybe they'd kill each other. But,
you know. If you can get them past that stage, usually they love each other. What goes in a good care package?
Well, the best thing to go into a care package is a quality letter. Hmm. That's the best thing because, you know, lots of times you don't have email. Lots of times, and there's something about being able to hold something and read it over and over again. And so a letter, and if you can pull in some letters from some of the younger kids in the neighborhood or at church or whatever, they write the most precious things. That is really good. And then depending on the kid, you know, what was their favorite food? What was something that you had to hide from them after Halloween? You know, those are the kind of things that, you know, something that says home and, you know, Oreos for one of my kids, chocolate chip cookies for another.
We're speaking this hour with Elaine Lowry Bry, who has 4 children who are military officers in the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. Her new book is called Be Safe, Love Mom, A Military Mom's Stories of Courage, Comfort, and Surviving Life on the Home Front. We'll come back to the conversation in a couple of minutes. You can join it by calling 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from the new SMU Doctor of Liberal Studies program, a customizable evening doctoral program for Dallas community leaders and professionals. Now accepting applications for fall. More at smu.edu/DLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Elaine Lowry Bry is my guest. She has children serving in the Navy, Marines, Air Force, and Army, and she's the author of a new book called Be Safe, Love Mom, A Military Mom's Stories of Courage, Comfort, and Surviving Life on the Home Front. You can join us at 800-933-5372. Elaine, I have to ask, when you had the older 3 in 3 service branches, like, did your youngest son have any choice except to go to the Army?
Actually, he said he was never going to be in the military. And he was being recruited for football at a number of schools. And we came home one night and he was online filling out an application for Army ROTC. And we were both astounded because he had always said, I'm not going to be the 4th Bry. You know, he didn't like the... And even though... the older 3 majored in different majors at the Naval Academy and had very different experiences. You know, they were not clones, but he was just vehement. That was not what he was going to do. But he ended up, it was a wonderful program. It's been discontinued now, but he ended up going to the University of North Dakota Army ROTC, where he also earned all of his helicopter ratings through a commercial rating. So by the time he graduated, he was a commercial helicopter pilot and had a shorter training period in the Army and now flies the Chinook, the biggest helicopter that they have. So, but yeah, he really surprised us. But he's always been a child full of surprises. So I guess that was to be expected.
You also had a surprise invitation to the White House, which shocked you, not least because you are not a Democrat, and you were invited by the Obamas.
Well, and the invitation to the state dinner came about because I was really intrigued with Joining Forces, the program that's being supported by Mrs. Obama and the White House, about bringing business and community and universities and everyone together in a way to support military and military families. For just one example, my daughter-in-law is a nurse. She doesn't have to go through a major licensing hurdle every time they get stationed somewhere else like my mother did when she was a teacher. And just in so many ways. And so I just decided to send a Christmas card and a thank you note, you know, for the work that they were doing to support military families. Because growing up, as I did, in the Vietnam War, support was not necessarily a term that I was that familiar with. Mm-hmm. If anything, it was the opposite. And so I was just very appreciative. And several months later, I had been overseas with my husband, who was then working in Bangladesh, and came back to the States to this huge pile of mail. And here was an invitation to a state dinner. And I really thought it was a joke, or, you know, I just, you know, why would somebody invite me to a state dinner? And turns out, you know, we had brought the camera because we were going to sit in the back and take pictures of all the big shots, you know. And as we went through the receiving line, then the First Lady said, oh, by the way, you'll be sitting with us. And so we sat at the head table with George Clooney. And, you know, it was just, I mean, it was ridiculous. I called my daughter, of course, as soon as I found out, and I'm, you know, saying, you aren't going to believe this. So it was quite an unexpected surprise.
Do you feel like support of the military is something that is starting to dissolve partisan boundaries in this country? Is it something that we can all agree on?
Oh, definitely. And first of all, I have to say, as someone who lived through a time when I had to defend my father, and when I walked on campus in my ROTC uniform and I was harassed and spit at, the last 25 years of support for the military has been so heartwarming and so healing for me. And I think that on the whole, the American people have been so supportive. What concerns me a little bit, you know, there has been a lot of press about, you know, winding down in Afghanistan, and some people think it's over. And, you know, just before we went on air, I just saw a news bulletin, 500 from Fort Bragg heading to Iraq. Last week, more troops from Fort Drum. It's not over. And we have troops in Africa. We have troops in Eastern Europe. We have troops in Asia. It's not over. And so I hope that the support continues because, you know, there's not an end in sight. And that gets discouraging. You know, you want to think, you know, Johnny's going to come marching home and we can take a deep breath. And it doesn't seem like that's happening. And so I'm just so appreciative to everyone who says, you know, thank you for your service or thank you for your children's service. I am very grateful for that because it means a lot to me.
We have an email here from Laurel in Dallas who asks, what can we say or do for a soldier or airman or marine or seaman, I'm assuming, when we're out and about, especially at the airport, to show our appreciation? Or are we bothering them and should we just leave them alone?
Well, you know, some of them, like my kids will get kind of embarrassed, like, well, I haven't really done that much. And I say, you are the vessel to receive the thanks for all the people that have done more than you. And so just accept it graciously. You know, when someone, you know, says thank you, you know, that is meaningful. If you want to really make their day and buy them a coffee or whatever, especially, you know, some of those younger enlisted who have very little income, those are all meaningful gestures. And the thing is that even if maybe that specific person hasn't served, you know, or felt like they deserved it, they're standing in for so many who do. And so just keep thanking them.
Some of my favorite stories in the book are about the fact that, of course, military parents support their sons and daughters in the service, but you've discovered that military parents will also go out of their way to take care of somebody else's son or daughter.
You know, there's this weird connection that happens as soon as your son or daughter enlists in the military and you become part of a family that you didn't even know you were part of. And so if I send word out on Facebook that one of my children have broken down in West Virginia, I can guarantee you there will be a parent there who will move heaven and earth to come and help that child. And that happens over and over again. And it can be people that, you know, there's a connection, and it can be people that have no connection, but there is this bond between military parents. It's because they're all our kids. And that's why when there is a loss, so many times you will see flag lines and you will see the Patriot Guard and you will see all these people coming out to support. And any military parent who can will be there because they are all our children. And it can be a little overwhelming when you first figure that out because all of a sudden, you know, there's all these people that are just ready to drop anything to help your child. But I have seen it over and over and over again.
What have you learned about reaching out to fellow military parents who do get that news that everybody dreads?
Well, I think, you know, in life, whenever there are really hard things, you know, a lot of us don't know what to say. And a lot of times you just have to say something or you just have to hug or you just have to cross over that terrible sadness and uncomfortable feeling. And you just have to say, you know, I am so sorry. You know, we will do whatever we can to preserve his or her memory. We will pray for you. We will be there for you. And, you know, we just had that horrible experience last year. My daughter's best friend from the Naval Academy was killed in an aircraft accident. And, you know, there's a part of you, especially if your child is also serving, where you just want to curl up in a ball and just pretend none of this ever happens. But you need to reach out and you need to say, you know, we are so sorry and we will not forget. And that's huge. Not forgetting that they have this legacy of honor and service.
What do you know about the way your kids, and I hate to call them kids because they're adults, but how they support one another?
Well, and you know, that's a term like children or kids. I mean, biologically, they are my kids.
Right, right.
And even though they're grown up and they think they're smarter than me, I mean, they're very successful and, you know, in no way are they immature. But I can't think of progeny sounds a little stiff. So they text each other a lot. They give each other advice about navigating different circumstances. They tease each other a lot. And, of course, they all make fun of me together. So
they're bonded in that.
Yes, they are a unit beyond their service, unless, of course, it's a football game like the Army-Navy game or the Air Force Navy game, and then they are at pitched battle. But
are any of them anticipating careers after the military? Is that something that's on the horizon for any of them yet?
I think our daughter just transitioned to the reserve. She's in this, she's an engineer, astronautical engineer, my rocket scientist, who she does this really unique kind of a job where she activates for a month at a time for special projects, and she works with satellite launches. And I could see her potentially, maybe her dream was always to be an astronaut. So maybe that's on the horizon or something with NASA. But she can also just keep doing what she's doing and just keep doing it more and more and more. So that's a possibility. My two older boys, I think right now they're about halfway through their commitments. And, you know, it's kind of hard to fly an F-18 outside of the military.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't see him leaving that for an airline job. But, you know, I tell them, which is what, you know, we never told any of them to join the military. I think that it is such a huge commitment and such, and I never told any of my students to join. It's such a huge commitment and such a big sacrifice. It has to be your own personal calling. And it's the same thing with what to do next. You know, if you serve your time and then you want to move on and do something else, that's great. The biggest thing that we've always said is just go for your dreams and you know, where you have your passions. And so I hope that they all find, you know, their spot where they want to be in years to come. But right now, you know, it seems like they're all where they are, at least for the next 3 or 4 years.
Do you ever worry about what goes in the backpack of an astronaut mom?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
That's your next book. We'll talk in 10 years.
Okay.
At the end of the day, and I really love this, you say that you can handle these sacrifices because it's all about love. It's about your love for your children, and it's ultimately about your love for your country.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wrote about my family credo that my parents instilled, live with honor, love your country, do your duty, and suck it up. And there is something about watching your children live a life that is beyond just their own desires and selfish, you know, their small little world, and to be willing to sacrifice for a greater cause. And I'm so proud of them for that, because it's not easy. And so it is kind of the fuel that allows me to keep going, along with prayer, and I depend on that a lot. But I am very proud of the path that they have chosen. And, you know, if one of them decides to become, you know, an astronaut, or, you know, another wants to be a pastor or whatever, I will be proud of them as well. But I'm glad that they took this time to give back to their country.
Elaine Lowry Bry is the mother of 4 U.S. military officers, one each in the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. Her new book is called Be Safe, Love Mom, A Military Mom's Stories of Courage, Comfort, and Surviving Life on the Home Front. Elaine, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for making this time for us.
Well, thank you. It's just been a joy to talk with you as well.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can write email to the show at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.